I'm Bob Bolton from the University of Alaska Fairbanks, and this is Alaska Voices, a place for communities to connect through conversation in order to build a better tomorrow for Alaskans and the world.
Originally, I grew up in Gakona, Alaska.
Tyonek.
Egypt.
Idaho.
Grand Pard.
St. Lawrence Island.
St. Paul.
And I'm here with my student.
My science buddy.
My teacher.
My homie.
I'm his daughter.
My name is Jesse Robertson. I'm 39 years old, and I am talking to Jessica Guerin, who is my friend and colleague.
And this is Jessica Guerin. I'm 41 years old, and I'm talking with Jesse Robertson, my friend and colleague.
What's being a scientist been like for you?
I have spent most of my time trying to prove myself. I am not taken seriously, mostly because I don't have a PhD. And so without the walls of academia, I'm a very highly respected scientist who is called on to give talks to forums that range from 60 to 300 people. And within the walls of the university, I can't get invited to the meeting.
When you say you're not respected and things like that, what types of things occur?
I'm discounted. I'm talked over, but I have to be able to be on my toes and like defend all the work that my team has done. And yet, if I question any of the work any of the other teams have done, immediately I'm called in the office. I have fought and fought to finally be allowed to be a principal investigator on a grant and a proposal. And I thought that it was completely against the rules at the institution that I could even write a grant without a PhD until one of the fantastic members of our proposal development staff, these are fantastic people that do amazing things, pointed out to me that that was completely farcical. I still wasn't allowed to do that until I became a PhD candidate, not a PhD student, but a candidate.
Before I ask you the next question, I wanted to chime in with something that came up for me while you were talking. I had been a co-I on one of these McIntyre-Stennis grants, and we were all on board on that project and what was going to happen, and it was going to be stuff I know how to do, like forestry, drought, stress kind of stuff. And I wrote myself in as a research faculty. I gave myself a raise. I haven't gotten a raise in like 8 years, so I thought, sure, let's do it. And up my responsibility and things like that, and then put in some research money to make some good decisions for the future. And then it got awarded, and then I got completely cut out of it. I got erased. Rules, not just here, in different places, are really unclear, and they just seem to be applied the way anybody feels like applying them. And what is so frustrating is it's hard to find the person to go ask. It's hard to find the answers. With all of your struggles here, why are you still at UAF?
Entrepreneurship scares the crap out of me. I'm supporting a family of four. I'm the primary breadwinner. I need the stability. I want to work for Alaska and Alaskans. And so working at the university is really the best solution I've come up with so far. I'd like to return to your grant discussion. That is the most egregious breach of professionalism that I have heard.
It's the second time it's happened.
I can't wrap my head around it. I can't wrap my head around it, like, at all.
I was a co-I on a grant, and the PI left to go somewhere else, and I had a good relationship with them. And the PI said, well, the grant stays in Wyoming, but Jesse can take it over. And with the negotiations, I wasn't allowed in the room for the discussion. And then the PI came out, and he was so angry. He's like, they're giving the money back to NASA, and you've been treated like nothing better than a high school student.
What I'm seeing is that it's not just because I don't have a PhD. I get in trouble for being too loud. And my job is to communicate. And so receiving emails as well as having direct, you know, getting called into the boss's office, if you will, because I'm too physically loud and I'm just using my speaking voice. My regular crowd is the oil and gas industry. And in the oil and gas industry, it's like hanging out in a cigar bar. It is bad. So when I go to oil and gas conferences, I get an Airbnb. I don't stay in any of the hotels. So nobody knows where I'm staying, and I can do what I want, and I can drink the booze and leave. But I have never had an interaction with any of my industry sponsors that did not have a sexual overtone. And I forgot about it. Like, you just get so used to it.
But I've seen, like, conference behavior. It is just this weird culture of, I feel like somebody is never really talking to me or has my best interests in mind. I mean, it's not always the case, but it's this sense of like they're looking at me through this lens of like maybe trying to figure out how old I am, or do I remind them of their daughter, or, you know, they're transferring something onto me. It's this weight that gets heavier and heavier. And what I've noticed is that if one more thing gets piled on, I start to feel myself just disintegrating. It's almost like instead of making my skin thicker, it's made my skin a lot more raw. But a phrase that keeps coming up in my mind is the death by a thousand cuts. You know, when we reach kind of, I would say, our age, just because we've been in the system long enough, it's this sort of unnamed feeling. And I can't quite put my finger on it, but I know it's there. And I know it's there because when I talk to my male colleagues, they're like, what do you mean? So, of course, I go through the thought cycle of like, well, you know, I'm a pretty sensitive person. Maybe I'm just feeling a little bit more. But then we explain it away. You know, maybe it is when somebody rubs my back, or, you know, when they come around and do that weird side rub thing, or talk to me like I'm a baby, or sweetheart me, like when I call a company to ask for help about their equipment. I have been locked out of a room of my own salary negotiation. I've been treated like a child. I've actually had senior people say like, well, sweetheart, this is what I would say to my daughter.
You know, I keep returning to the, I always thought it was just because I didn't have a PhD statement. And there's a lot of stuff that I haven't experienced that you have experienced because I got my master's 10 years after my bachelor's. I had kids. I was staff.
One of the things I didn't realize is like all the biases regarding PhD stuff. If they're, you know, having these hierarchical issues now, is that suddenly going to change when you get your degree? Or is it, do they have muscle memory now or something? I don't know. In a lot of cases, I don't think that when these biases happen, I don't think these are bad people. I think some people are bad people, but I think some of it is just blind spots or muscle memory or something. And I'm not making excuses for them, but it's like we have to identify why it's happening to do something about it. That and a general lack of consequences for basically almost anybody. Thank you for talking with me today.
I really wish we could have covered more ground.
But these are conversations that obviously don't come out all at once and I think are good to continue.
Alaska Voices builds bridges by creating a space where community members, friends, policymakers, and scientists can share stories and place-based knowledge. This project was developed in partnership with StoryCorps and was funded by the Alaska Climate Adaptation Science Center. Additional funding was provided by the University of Alaska Fairbanks Chancellor through a generous gift from the Bentley Family Trust. Alaska Voices would not be possible without the help and efforts of an amazing group of people. Our producer and audio engineer is Kelsey Skomberg of Mossy Stone Media. Our podcast and outreach specialist is Michael DeLu, and our website designer is Carolyn Rosner. If you are interested in more conversations or information, please visit our website at alaskavoices.org.